2 Samuel chapter 18, David is camped at Mahanaim. He's on the other side of the Jordan. He's fled from Absalom. Absalom is mustering a force to come to David. David left Jerusalem with 600 men. Evidently, there are many others that have gathered themselves to David now. And as David is at that place, Mahanaim, where Jacob saw the angels encamped around his own family, named it Mahanaim because it was a place of two hosts or two armies, two camps. And David evidently is encouraged at this point in time. He begins to take control of the situation as they camp here and start to take inventory of their situation. And it says that David numbered the people that were with him and set captains of thousands and captains of hundreds over them. And David sent forth a third part of the people under the hand of Joab, and a third part under the hand of Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, Joab's brother, and a third part under the hand of Ittai the Gittite. And the king said unto the people, I will surely go forth with you myself. David's over 60 years old at this point in time. No doubt the sin with Bathsheba, the thing over the last decade that has snowballed into all of the heartache in his life is in his thoughts. He remembers the last time that it was the time of year that the kings go forth to battle and he stayed home. And now he's saying to the army, certainly, I will go with you myself to battle. The people answered, thou shalt not go forth, for if we flee away, they will not care for us. Neither of half of us die, and will they care for us. But now you are worth 10,000 of us. Therefore now it is better that thou comfort us out of the city, or that you encourage us out of the city. So they're saying to David, there's no sense in us going to battle if you're going to die. The whole reason we've left our homes and gathered here is on your behalf, and for us there's no sense in any of this if your life is lost in the battle. Please stay here. We'll take the battle into our own hands and restore the kingdom. And the king said unto them, what seemeth you best I will do. And the king stood by the gate side, and all the people came out by hundreds and by thousands. And the king commanded Joab and Abishai and Ittai, saying, deal gently for my sake with the young man, even with Absalom. And all of the people heard when the king gave all the captains charge concerning Absalom. Now, he's probably doing that for more than one reason. He knows how ruthless Joab and Abishai can be. No doubt he's still blaming himself for much of this trouble, even though Absalom is in rebellion trying to kill his own father. He had been long-suffering with Saul when Saul was trying to put him to death. Now he asks that they deal gently with Absalom. So the people went out into the field against Israel, and the battle was in the wood of Ephraim. Now, we're not certain here. Some people are confused because they're on the other side of Jordan in the area of Gilead. And how are they in the forest of Ephraim there? Because that's on the other side of Jordan. It seems from Judges chapter 12, where Jephthah was in battle with Israel, that there were thousands of Ephraim that had crossed Jordan to go to battle. And Jephthah confronted them there and slaughtered them there, defeated them. And then, remember, as they're coming back towards Jordan, Jephthah's army is capturing them, making them say Shibboleth. Because they were Ephraimites, they could only say Sibboleth. So if they said, say Shibboleth, I know you remember the story, and they tried to say it but couldn't say the SH. It says they couldn't frame it because of the part of the country they're from. They knew they were Ephraimites, and they slaughtered them there. So evidently, there is a forest of Ephraim where there had been battle there in the area of Gilead. So same area there, and the battle was in the forest of Ephraim, where the people of Israel were slain before the servants of David. And there was a great slaughter that day of 20,000 men. For the battle was scattered over the face of all the country. Notice, and the wood, the forest, devoured more people that day than the sword devoured. So God had joined the battle to bring David back to Jerusalem. And Absalom met the servants of David. And Absalom rode upon a mule, and the mule went under the thick bough of a great oak, and his head was caught hold of the oak. And he was taken up between heaven and earth, and the mule that was under him ran away. So Josephus tells us it was his hair that was caught in the bough of the oak tree. 100 years before this, God had some squirrel drop an acorn in this spot, knowing he'd need this oak tree there to serve him someday in a rebellion against his king. And Absalom's hair gets caught in the bough of the tree, and the mule runs away and leaves him hanging in the air. Verse 10 says, a certain man saw it and told Joab and said, behold, I saw Absalom hanging in an oak tree. Joab said unto the man that told him, behold, thou sawest him, why dost thou not smite him there to the ground? I would have given thee 10 shekels of silver and a girdle. Wow. If I'd have known that. And the man said unto Joab, though I should receive 10,000 shekels of silver in my hand, yet would I not put forth my hand against the king's son, because in our hearing the king charged thee and Abishai and Attaiah, saying, beware that none touch the young man Absalom. Otherwise I should have wrought falsehood against my own life, for there is no matter hid from the king, and you yourself would have set yourself again. I had to come back, the king would have found out I killed Absalom, and the king would have said to you, Joab, take care of the scoundrel, and you'd have killed me. Then Joab said, I don't have time to listen to this. That's what it says there in verse 14. He knows the guy's right. Joab said, I may not tarry thus with thee. And he took 3 darts, javelins, in his hand, and he thrust them through the heart of Absalom while he was yet alive in the midst of the oak. Now David lost control of Joab when he sent Uriah back to Joab with a note, kill this man. Ever since then, Joab has had an angle on David. Joab's nature was like that anyhow. You remember that he killed his cousin Abner, and David mourned for Abner. But once David showed this weakness to Joab, this sin, now he has no right to rebuke Joab for his disobedience. And he's kind of lost part of what he had experienced from Joab in regards to loyalty. Joab may feel bad because Joab is the one, if you remember, who brought Absalom back from Geshur. He had been there 3 years in exile, and Joab saw David mourning and sad. So it was through his instigating and sending a wise woman of Tekoa to David to tell him the story that David said, okay, bring Absalom back. And now Joab may feel part of the responsibility. He sees Absalom hanging there in the tree, you know, burned down his barley field. He's not happy with him anyway. He takes opportunity, sticks these 3 javelins through Absalom, and then 10 young men that bore Joab's armor surrounded him and smote Absalom and slew him, just in case the 3 javelins in his heart didn't do the job. And Joab blew the trumpet, and the people returned from pursuing after Israel, for Joab held back the people, brought the slaughter to an end. And they took Absalom and cast him into a great pit in the forest and laid a very great heap of stones upon him. And all Israel fled, everyone to his tent. The people are afraid of the king's wrath because Absalom, that they had followed in rebellion, is dead. So all of Israel fleeing back to their homes. Now Absalom, in his lifetime, had taken and reared up for himself a pillar, which is in the king's dell. For he said, I have no son, isn't that interesting, to keep my name in remembrance. And he called the pillar after his own name, and it is called unto this day Absalom's place. Now, those of you who have been to Israel with us on one of the many trips, you know, down in the valley of Kidron, where it goes down towards Zion. Absalom's tomb is there. Now, how reliable that is, they're not certain, but it dates to this period. And back into antiquity, it's been called Absalom's tomb. Possibly, it, you know, you can walk inside of it, you can look at it, it's remarkable. Almost 3,000 years old, 2,700 years. Didn't have any sons, rears up a memorial to himself. And then Ahimaatz, the son of Zadok, said, "Let me now run and bear the king tidings, how that the Lord hath avenged him of his enemies." And Joab said, "Thou shalt not bear tidings this day, but thou shalt bear tidings another day. This day thou shalt bear no tidings, because the king's son is dead." I have a feeling that Joab has a certain level of respect for Zadok and Abiathar, the high priest, and for their sons, Ahimaatz and Jonathan. Ahimaatz seems to be a pious man. Joab says, "No, not today. You're not going to run and bring these tidings to the king. His son is dead." Then Joab said to Cushai, another man, "Go tell the king what thou hast seen." And possibly Cushai doesn't know the whole story. And Cushai bowed himself unto Joab, and he ran. Then said Ahimaatz, the son of Zadok, yet again to Joab, "But howsoever, whatever, let me, I pray thee, also run after Cushai." And Joab said, "Why will you run, my son, seeing that thou hast no tidings ready?" There's a lot of people like that. They want to run, and they don't have a message. God hasn't sent them. He wants to run. Why do you want to run? You know what I mean to say. But "be what may" is what "howsoever" means there. Said he, "It doesn't matter, Joab, let me run." Said unto him, "Run." Then Ahimaatz ran by the way of the plain, and he outran Cushai. He's in good shape for a priest. And David sat between the two gates, and the watchman went up to the roof over the gate unto the wall, and lifted up his eyes, and looked, and behold, a man running alone. Now that's usually good news. If you see the whole army running back, it's bad news. One man running usually is a messenger. And the watchman cried and told the king. And the king said, "Well, if he be alone, there is tidings in his mouth." And he came apace, and he drew near. And the watchman saw another man running. And the watchman called unto the porter and said, "Behold, another man running alone." The king said, "He also is bringing tidings." And the watchman said, "Methinketh the running of the foremost is like the running of Ahimaatz, the son of Zadok." Now, I don't know if he was famous for running. Fast priest might have been famous in his day. And the king said, "He is a good man, and cometh with good tidings." And Ahimaatz called, and said unto the king, "All is well." And he fell down to the earth upon his face before the king, and said, "Blessed be the Lord thy God, which hath delivered up the men that lifted up their hand against my lord the king." And the king said, "Is the young man Absalom safe?" It's all he can think of. And Ahimaatz answered, "When Joab sent the king's servant and me, thy servant, I saw a great tumult, but I don't know what it was all about." Shifting the issue here. And the king said unto him, "Okay, stand aside. You stand over here and be quiet." And he turned aside and he stood still. And behold, Cushai came, and Cushai said, "Tidings, my lord, the king, for the Lord hath avenged thee this day of all them that rose up against thee." The king said unto Cushai, "Is the young man Absalom safe?" And Cushai answered, "The enemies of my lord the king, and all that rise against thee to do thee hurt, be as that young man is." He's dead, David. And the king was much moved, and went up to the chamber over the gate, and he wept. And as he went, Thus he said, "My son Absalom, my son Absalom, would to God that I had died for thee, O Absalom, my son, my son." No doubt David, feeling much of the guilt, "Would to God I had died for thee." Understanding that it was before Amnon went into Tamar, it was before Absalom killed Amnon, before any of those things happened, the prophet had said to David, "The trouble is going to arise out of your own house. The sword won't depart from your house. Your wives are going to be exposed before all of Israel." And the things that Absalom had enacted were really pronounced that day by Nathan, the prophet. And no doubt now, as the news sweeps over David, Absalom, his son, is dead. A huge part of the guilt is something that he's feeling. And then saying, "I wish that I myself had died in his place." And guilt is a tremendous thing. It can hang on for a long time. I had a first cousin when I was a small boy, 1954, I think, committed murder, was sentenced to life in prison, went to Gaithersburg, was in 17 years, out, back in again in a couple of years, out, back in a couple of years, out again. The last I heard, he was living with a Christian family in New Jersey, so I'm hoping that he heard the truth. But 30 years after he killed his friend, he drove back to the same spot where he had killed his friend, and he killed himself. Guilt is a powerful force. How often we see a father that's been alcoholic, that's ruined the lives of his family and his children, even when he comes to Christ, how he bears the guilt and is so hard to console. And I think, you know, we need to grow in grace and the knowledge of the Lord Jesus Christ. I think that there is obviously the relief of that guilt once we come to Christ. We need to experience Jesus lifting that off of us, because he's paid for it all. He's carried it on Calvary 2,000 years ago. And there's no need of us continuing to carry it. In fact, our life is a greater witness when there's a power of a transformed life for other people to see. And we can actually say, "Yeah, I was blind, but now I see. I was lost. Now I'm found. I was abusive and I was a drunk, or I was a murderer, and Christ has changed my life. He set me free." Guilt is a terrible thing to bear. And it was told Joab, "Behold, the king weepeth." He's mourning for Absalom. "And the victory that day was turned into mourning unto all the people, for the people heard say that day how that the king was grieved for his son. And the people got them by stealth that day into the city, as people being ashamed steal away when they flee in the battle. But the king covered his face. And the king cried with a loud voice, 'O my son Absalom, O Absalom, my son, my son.'" No doubt, and people are hearing this. "And Joab came into the house to the king and said, 'Thou hast shamed this day the faces of all thy servants, which this day have saved thy life and the lives of thy sons and of thy daughters and the lives of thy wives and the lives of thy concubines, in that thou lovest thine enemies and hatest thy friends. For thou hast declared this day that thou regardest neither princes nor servants. For this day I perceive that if Absalom had lived and all we had died this day, then it had pleased thee well." David, you are wrong. And in this, I thank God for Absalom. I think Absalom's telling the truth. I think too often someone in David's position, it's too easy to be surrounded with yes men. it can be a lonely place because men in powerful positions quite often are surrounded by people who tell them what they want to hear rather than telling them the truth. And Absalom was a tough customer to work with, but thank God that David at this point has someone to walk in and tell him the truth. He says, David, you're flat wrong. All of these people's lives were in jeopardy. Your other sons, your daughters, your wives, your concubines, all of the men of Israel, they laid down their lives to protect you. And here you are, and it seems to me that if Absalom had lived and all of us were dead, that you'd be happier. It's wrong, David. Now, therefore, arise and go forth and speak comfortably or comfort unto thy servants. For I swear by the Lord, if thou go not forth, there will not tarry one with thee this night. They're all going to leave. And that will be worse unto thee than all the evil that befell thee from thy youth until now. This is going to end up being the worst time of your whole life. And I think Joab's advice in the best interest of both David and the kingdom. Then the king arose. He knows Joab is right. And he sat in the gate. And they told all the people, saying, behold, the king doth sit in the gate. And all the people came before the king, for Israel had fled, every man to his tent. And all the people were at strife throughout all of the tribes of Israel, saying, the king saved us out of the hand of our enemies, and he delivered us out of the hand of the Philistines, and now he has fled out of the land for Absalom. And this, these are the inhabitants back in the land, and they're saying, and this is always the case when the true king is not on the throne, and it's true in the life of an individual, it's true in the life of a nation. If God's king is not where he belongs, there's strife. If Christ is not king of our lives and king on the throne of our hearts, there's strife in our lives as an individual. Nothing is peaceable and nothing satisfies us. And it's true for the nation of Israel. It's true for the world. There'll be strife until the King of Kings comes. Now Israel's in strife. What did we do? We drove our king away, the one who delivered us from the Philistines and gave us a quality of life, and we turned to Absalom, and now Absalom, whom we anointed over us, verse 10, is dead in battle. Now, therefore, why speak ye not a word of bringing the king back? What are we being so slow for and so stubborn about? Even sometimes when we know the truth, we're slow and stubborn, aren't we? Even when we know, Lord, I've blown it, I need to bring the king back. The thing that I followed is dead. The rebellion is squashed. So am I. And Lord Jesus, we're so slow sometimes to get to our knees and say, Lord, come back. And King David sent unto Zadok, to Abiathar the priest, saying, speak unto the elders of Judah, saying, why are you the last to bring the king back to his house, seeing the speech of all Israel has come to the king, even to his house? You are my brethren, you are my bones and my flesh. Wherefore then are you the last to bring back the king? Isn't it interesting that David is not insecure at all? He's not coming back, forcing his way back in. He's not coming back to Israel saying, okay, bring out the bums that stood behind Absalom. I want to strike them down one at a time. And David is saying, you know what? You're my own tribe. You're my own flesh and bone. Why haven't you asked? I'm not coming back till you ask me to come back. I'm not forcing my way into your lives. I'll have none of that. If God is returning me to the throne, I don't have to strive for it. There's no insecurity in David at all. Why haven't you asked me back? You're my bone. You're my flesh. And he sends Zadok and Abiathar. But isn't it interesting? Sometimes it's harder to bring back the king than it was to put him on the throne the first time. I don't know if you've experienced that. And I get saved in 1972, but I struggled in the beginning. And a year and a half after I was saved, I used again and was backslidden and was probably worse than a heathen as a backslidden Christian. and went through a struggle. Felt like it wasn't worth living. Felt in my heart like I know my earthly father would be ashamed of me if he knew what I was doing, and I was certain my heavenly father was ashamed of me. And then even when I came back, I would read in the Word that he forgave me, but I couldn't forgive myself. Because I had sinned against light, I knew better. And what a struggle that is to bring back the King. Interesting. Important lessons learned there. Important lessons. I learned to serve him because I love him and because I'm grateful, not because I had to. It was no longer, I'm living this way because I have to be a Christian. Trying to be a Christian is a drag. Being a Christian because you love and you serve Christ is all the difference in the world. And for me to know, Lord, when you saved me, you knew I was going to go AWOL, and you saved me anyway. You're not shocked at what a bum I am. I'm shocked at what a bum I am. And Lord, what could I ever say about your graciousness to me? How could I ever turn away again from your broken heart? And I realized he was the one that was broken. You know, you imagine how a parent feels when they lose a child and their kid's picture is one of those milk cartons. And what a heartache it is. I think I'd rather know my child was dead than missing out there, thrust into some world of pornography or abuse. And I think that I realized then that his heart was more broken than mine was. And he was more relieved to have me back than I was relieved to get back. And it was hard to put the King back on the throne again because I have never known that kind of love before. I'd never known, whether from a parent or a best friend or that kind of love that just without any strings attached could say, you know, I have this capacity to see next week, next year, 10 years from now, 100 years from now, and I saw it all when I saved you. And I saved you. Anyway, bringing back the King. Why are you so slow to bring me back? You're my bone and my flesh. Why are you the last? And he says to Zadok and Abiathar, say ye unto Amasa. Now this was his nephew who had led Absalom's army in rebellion against David. Say ye to Amasa, art thou not of my bone and my flesh? God do so to me, and more also, if thou be not captain of the host before me continually in the place of Joab. Now, David's mad at Joab because Joab has killed Absalom. David wants to reunite the kingdom, so he says to his nephew Amasa, who had actually been in rebellion against him, Amasa, the Lord do so more to me, and also if I don't give you Joab's position. Well, let's reunite the kingdom. I'll let you lead the armies of Israel. And he bowed the heart of all of the men of Judah, even as the heart of one man, so that they sent this word unto the king, return thou, and all thy servants, their hearts were broken. So the king returned and came to Jordan, and Judah came to Gilgal to go to meet the king, to conduct the king over Jordan. And Shimei, remember him? Anybody remember him? You guys here in the last couple of weeks? Anybody conscious in the last 2 weeks? Shimei is the guy, remember, that was cursing at David and throwing stones at him while he was leaving Jerusalem, calling a bloody man and all, you know, Abishai, why should this dead dog live? Remember, let me cut his head off. Well, the king's coming back. Shimei, the son of Gera, a Benjamite, which was of Behurim, hasted, I guess he did hurry, and came down with the men of Judah to meet King David. And there were 1,000 men of Benjamin with him. So he must have been influential, Shimei. And Ziba, the servant of the house of Saul, and his 15 sons and his 20 servants with him. And they went over Jordan before the king. They crossed over to meet him. And there went over a ferry boat to carry over the king's household and to do what he thought good. And Shimei, the son of Gera, fell down before the king as he was come over Jordan. Because Shimei's got himself in a pickle here. In a Jewish pickle. And said unto the king, let not my lord impute iniquity unto me. Just kidding, David. Well, I was having a bad day. I don't know what I was thinking. Remember when I was spitting and throwing stones and cursing at you? I'm the dead dog, remember? Neither do thou remember that which thy servant did perversely the day that my lord the king went out of Jerusalem, that the king should take it to his heart. Don't take it to heart, David. When I get in a bad mood, I throw stones and curse at my wife. So nothing personal. For thy servant doth know that I have sinned. Therefore, behold, I am come the first this day of all the house of Joseph to go down to meet my lord the king. And what's David going to say when Shimei is coming saying, I know I've sinned? Because David's coming back from the battle with Absalom dead, knowing that he sinned. But Abishai, here he is, the son of Zeruiah, answered and said, shall not Shimei be put to death for this, because he cursed the Lord's anointed? And David said, you know what he says, what have I to do with thee, you sons of Zeruiah, that you should this day be adversaries to me? Shall there any man be put to death this day in Israel? For do not I know that I am this day king over Israel? I'm not insecure. God's giving me the throne back. There's no man named Shimei throwing stones and dust in the air and cursing that's going to override God on his throne. The kingdom's being united. No one's going to die. There's been enough death. David is a remarkable man. Therefore, the king, you know, wouldn't you, if you were David, and this is the guy at the lowest point in your life that was cursing at you and throwing stones at you, and wouldn't you at least, scare him a little, just. You really are a rat, Shimei. That was the worst day of my life. And do you have any idea? And you just expect to come here and just, I'm going to just, ha, no biggie. I think I need to pray about this a day or two, Shimei. I think you've just, let him sweat a little. But David, verse 23, therefore the king said unto Shimei, thou shalt not die. And the king swear unto him. So David is burying the axe this day. Now he's leaving the handle stick out of the ground. 1 Kings chapter 2 tells us that Shimei is finally dealt with at some point because he transgressed something that David had set up. Mephibosheth, remember him, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king, had neither dressed his feet nor trimmed his beard nor washed his clothes from the day that the king departed until the day the king came. So he's a mess. You smell this guy coming. Here comes Mephibosheth down to see the king. It came to pass when he was come to Jerusalem to meet the king said unto him, wherefore wentest not thou with me, Mephibosheth? Now, you remember, he's Jonathan's son. He's crippled. And I think David sees by his appearance that he had been mourning, that he had been brokenhearted. You remember, Mephibosheth's servant Ziba came to David when he was leaving and said, David, Mephibosheth doesn't care about you. You know, he's thinking about taking back the house of Saul. That's ridiculous. When a crippled man is going to take, raise up the house of Saul again while Absalom's in Jerusalem. And the king then had given Mephibosheth's land to Ziba. Now as the king sees Mephibosheth, sees the condition he's in, smells him, He realizes this guy does care about me. And he answered, "My lord, O king, my servant," speaking of Ziba, "deceived me. For thy servant said, 'I will saddle my donkey that I may ride thereon and go to the king.' Because thy servant is lame." And funky. David can smell his sincerity, I'm sure. And he hath slandered thy servant unto my lord the king. But my lord the king is as an angel of God. Do therefore what is good in thine eyes." I don't care, David. This is the truth. He deceived me. You know me well enough. I'm not going to prove my case. Whatever seems right to you. "For all of my father's house were but dead men before my lord the king. Yet didst thou set thy servant among them which eat at thine own table. What right therefore have I yet to cry any more unto the king? You treated me graciously. I have no right to plead for anything. In any other situation, my father's house would have been put to death." And the king said unto him, "Why speakest thou any more of thy matters? I have said, 'Thou and Ziba divide the land.'" Now, David is testing his heart. There's a young boy named Solomon, about 10 years old, listening. Ziba has told David one story. Mephibosheth is telling David another story. And David says, "Well, does this sound familiar? Let's do this. Let's divide the land." And Mephibosheth said unto the king, "Yea, let him take all. For as much as my lord the king has come again in peace unto his own house." Solomon will face two women with a baby. And the one woman will say, "It's mine." The other one will say, "It's mine." And Solomon, no doubt remembering this, will say, "Divide the baby. Give them each half." And the one woman said, "No, don't kill the baby. Give it to her." And David would know that that was the real mother. I mean, Solomon. So no doubt, young boy watching all of this as they come back to Jerusalem. Mephibosheth said unto the king, "Yea, let him take all," verse 30, "for as much as my lord the king has come again in peace unto his own house." That's enough for me, David. You're back on the throne. That's all I care about. "And Barzillai, the Gileadite, came down from Rogelim and went over Jordan with the king to conduct him over Jordan." Now Barzillai was a very aged man. He was 80 years old. Now that's old for that day. 80 years old, he may have observed Samuel and Saul and David and had watched God's hand in Israel. He was a wise old man. "And he had provided the king with sustenance while he was at Mahanaim, for he was a very great man," or wealthy man. "And the king said to Barzillai, 'Come thou over with me, and I will feed thee with me in Jerusalem.' And Barzillai said unto the king, 'How long have I to live that I should go up with the king to Jerusalem? I am this day 80 years old, 80 years old. And can I discern between good and evil?" I'm slipping, David. I'm not what I used to be. "And can thy servant taste what I eat or drink? My taste buds are gone. Can I hear anymore?" I wonder if this boy Solomon is listening to this when I read Ecclesiastes chapter 12. The grinders wear out, the ears no longer hear them. You know, he's got a living sermon here. "I can't hear any more the voice of singing men and singing women. Wherefore then should thy servant be a burden unto my lord the king?" And I've lived my years. I've lived more than my years. 70 is the average, David. I've lived a decade longer than most. I'm slipping. Sometimes I get up and look in the mirror and say, "Who's that? Don't hear so well anymore. Can't enjoy food like I used to. Why should I be a burden? Thy servant will go a little way over Jordan with the king. I'm going to conduct you, but why should the king recompense it to me for such a reward. Doesn't make any sense. I was just doing what was right. Let thy servant, I pray thee, turn back again, that I may die in my own city and be buried by the grave of my father and of my mother. But behold, thy servant Shimham, let him go over with my lord the king, and do to him what shall seem good unto thee. So Barzillai has this young man with him, Shimham. Either he was a pain and Barzillai was glad to get rid of him, take him with you. Evidently he's a young man of character. There's a book that's written by Dr. Stanley called The Jewish Church that says that Shimham started a caravansary in Bethlehem to show kindness unto strangers, and that that was Barzillai's legacy, and that Joseph and Mary came to that inn. No room, but stayed in the perimeter. Shimham, let him go over with my lord the king and do him what seems good unto thee. The king answered, Shimham shall go over with me. I will do to him that which seemeth good unto thee. Whatsoever thou shalt require of me, that will I do for thee. And all the people went over Jordan. And when the king was come over, the king kissed Barzillai and blessed him, and he returned unto his own place. And the king went on to Gilgal, and Shimham went on with him, and all the people of Judah conducted the king, and also half of the people of Israel. And behold, all the men of Israel came to the king, and said unto the king, why have our brethren, the men of Judah, stolen thee away? And have brought the king and his household, and all David's men with him over Jordan. Now this is just like people. A couple of days before this, all of these people were joining Absalom and are revolt against David. Absalom is now killed and the king's coming back, and the people of Israel are mad because the people from Judah went there first. So now they're coming to David saying, why have the people of Judah stolen you from us? You're our king too. And all the men of Judah answered the men of Israel. Now they're fighting over David. Because the king is near of kin to us. We're related. Wherefore then be ye angry in this matter? Have we eaten at all of the king's cost? Or hath he given us any gift? Did you get gypped? Have we got something you haven't got? Is that what you think is going on here? And the men of Israel answered the men of Judah and said, well, we have 10 parts in the king. They're dividing him up now. And we have also more right in David than you. Why then did ye despise us, that our advice should not be first had in bringing back the king? It was our idea first. And the words of the men of Judah were fiercer. That's the way when you're losing an argument to win, than the words of the men of Israel. So, you hear this little rumbling for the first time of the 10 tribes. This is how the kingdom will divide after Solomon, the days of Jeroboam and so forth, and Jehoiakim, and all of the line of kings that will follow. The 10 tribes in the north will divide from Judah in the south. And there happened to be there a man of Belial. Just figures. Everything's just getting fixed, and there's always one of these guys around. Whose name was Sheba, the son of Bichri, a Benjamite, Saul's tribe. And he blew a trumpet and said, we have no part in David. Neither we have inheritance in the son of Jesse, every man to his tents, O Israel. So this guy's calling the 10 tribes now to succeed, to revolt against David. So every man of Israel went up from after David and followed Sheba, the son of Bichri, but the men of Judah clave unto their king from Jordan even to Jerusalem. And David came to his house at Jerusalem, and the king took the 10 women that were his concubines that Absalom had shamed, whom he had left to keep house, and put them inward and fed them, but went not in unto them. So they were shut up, but just cared for, unto the day of their death, living in widowhood. Then said the king to Amasa, this nephew who he's given Joab's job to. Assemble me the men of Judah within 3 days, and be thou here present. So Amasa went to assemble the men of Judah, but he tarried longer than the set time which he had appointed. So David says, 3 days, I want you to gather the men of Judah, that we go after Sheba, that the situation doesn't get worse. But Amasa took longer than he should have to gather the troops. And David said to Abishai, now shall Sheba, the son of Bichri, do us more harm than did Absalom. Take thou thy Lord's servants and pursue after him, lest he get him in the fenced cities and escape us. So David, now knowing that Amasa is wasting time for some reason, doesn't go to Joab. He goes to Abishai and he says, do me a favor. You take the mighty men and pursue after Sheba, because if he gets into the north and gets into the fortified cities, we're going to have a tough time with this situation. And there went out after Joab's men, and the Kerethites, which are the king's special forces, and the Pelethites, and all the mighty men. And they went out of Jerusalem and pursued after Sheba, the son of Bichri. And when they were at a great stone, which is in Gibeon, high country, 5 miles north of Jerusalem, Amasa went before them. Now, evidently, he's got back. He's found that the army went without him, so he runs out now to catch up with them. And Joab's garment that he had put on was girded unto him, and upon it a girdle, a breastplate, with a sword fastened to his loins in the sheath thereof, and as he went forth, it fell out. Now, this is a bad situation. Amasa gets back to Jerusalem, finds out everybody's left. He puts on Joab's uniform. He's the general now. So he puts on Joab's breastplate and Joab's sword and Joab's outfit and runs and catches up with the army. But as he's catching up with the army, he's stumbling and the sword falls out on the ground. And who catches it but Joab? Now, this is a bad situation. You don't want to run into Joab when you have Joab's uniform on and have your sword fall out and have Joab pick it up. So he's on his way. He loses the sword. And Joab said to Amasa, what are you doing in my uniform? That's what he was thinking. Art thou in health, cuz? They're cousins. They're not brothers. Same thing. And Joab took Amasa by the beard. Now, you know, this is no good. Anybody who Joab takes by the beard is going bye-bye. And Joab took Amasa by the beard with the right hand and kissed him. But Amasa took no heed to the sword that was in Joab's hand. So he, Joab, smote him there, of course, with it in the fifth rib, and shed out his bowels to the ground, and struck him not again. He died. So Joab, no doubt, took off his armor and took it to himself again. And Abishai, his brother, pursued after Sheba, the son of Bichri. Now, it's hard to get Joab fired. He comes and kills his replacements and takes his job back. And Joab, no doubt, has ill feelings towards Amasa because he had aligned himself with Absalom in the war against David. And here comes Amasa along with Joab's uniform on. There was no way Joab was going to let that happen. And one of Joab's men stood by him and said, he that favoreth Joab and he that is for David, let him go after Joab. So they rallied the troops behind Joab again. And Amasa wallowed in blood in the midst of the highway. And when the man saw that all the people stood still, there's a traffic jam. You know, people are the same today. You get on a highway somewhere and traffic is slowed down for miles, and when you finally come, somebody's broken down on the side of the road or there was an accident, and instead of just driving by, everybody slows down to see, is there trouble, is there blood, is there anything going on? Well, all of the people stood still. He removed Amasa out of the highway into the field and cast a cloth upon him, and when he saw that everyone that came by stood still. And when he was removed out of the highway, all of the people went on after Joab to pursue after Sheba, the son of Bichri. And he went through all the tribes of Israel unto Abel and to Beth-Maacah and all the Barites, and they were gathered together and went also after him. So the army is growing. He's about 14 miles west of the city of Dan now. And they came and besieged him in Abel. So Sheba and his troops are inside this city of Abel, of Beth-Maachah. And they cast up a bank against the city, a siege, and it stood in the trench. And all of the people that were with Joab battered the wall to throw it down. Now, Sheba, typical coward, terrorist, using the people as a human shield, typical of the character of the man, then cried a wise woman out of the city, "Hear, hear, say I, pray you, unto Joab, come near hither, that I may speak with thee." And when he was come near to her, the woman said, "Are you Joab?" And he answered, "Yep." And then she said unto him, "Hear the words of thine handmaid." And he said, "I'm listening." And then she spake, saying, "They were wont to speak in old times, saying, they shall surely ask counsel at Abel." And so they ended the matter. She said, you know, this city is known for counsel. It has a reputation. In fact, in old times, they would say, let's go to Abel and ask counsel so that we can settle a matter. "I am one of them that are peaceable and faithful in Israel. Thou seekest to destroy a city and a mother in Israel. Why wilt thou swallow up the inheritance of the Lord?" And Joab answered and said, far be it from me that I should swallow up or destroy. Just ask my cousin, Amasa. "The matter is not so, but a man from Ephraim, Sheba, the son of Bichri, by name, hath lifted up his hand against the king, even against David. Deliver him only, and I will depart from the city." And the woman said unto Joab, "Behold, his head shall be thrown over the wall unto thee." Joab must think, this is my kind of gal. What's your phone number anyway? I could use a wife like this. Maybe this is where the phrase "heads up" came from. We're not sure. Then the woman went in to all the people. They had a vote in her wisdom. This is the story, guys. There's a man here named Sheba. We can either protect him and all lose our lives, or we can cut off his head, throw it over the wall, and Joab will leave. And she won in a landslide, obviously. She goes into the people. They cut off the head of Sheba, the son of Bichri, and cast it out to Joab. I mean, your imagination has to do the work here. I mean, sitting outside waiting to see what's going to happen, and all of a sudden this thing comes flying over the wall. Joab had to say to somebody, go check it, make sure that's him. Somebody who can recognize him. I have to stop there. My mind is still going. Shorter than the last time I saw him, but he just... I think that's him. Threw this head over the wall. His head comes flying out of the city. I mean, did somebody inside go like this? You know, or just kind of like a football? He blew a trumpet, and they retired from the city, every man to his tent. And Joab returned to Jerusalem. And all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Sheba back together again. Now, Joab, we get a quick glimpse at David's government here after he's returned to Jerusalem. Joab was over all of the host of Israel. You know, here comes David, here comes Joab back again. Where's Amasa? Don't ask. Joab fired him. Joab's general again. Okay. Joab was over all of the host of Israel. He's commander in chief. Benaiah, The son of Jehoiada was over the Kerethites and over the Pelethites. He was in charge of special forces. Adoram was over the tribute. He was the tax man in charge of all the taxes. Jehoshaphat, the son of Ahilud, was recorder. He was the historian. He was the one who was secretary of state. Shiva was scribe. Zadok and Abiathar were the priests. And Ira, also the Jairathite, was a chief ruler about David, one of David's advisors. A picture of David's government in later years, in the last few years before his life will come to an end. So